North Idaho News of the Week is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty, commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com. Good morning. You've tuned in for North Idaho News of the Week. You're listening to 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. I'm Jack Peterson, and across from me, as usual on a Friday morning, is Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. Happy Friday the 13th.
Oh, it is Friday the 13th. I kind of forgot about
that.
We're
not superstitious, so.
No, it'll be fine. And we're also delighted to be joined this morning by Evie Seberg and Lauren Reichenbach, both of them reporters with the Bonner County Daily Bee. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's run down the headlines right off the bat here. This one out of today's Daily Bee, here in Bonner County, the attorneys for the Fair Board have filed a motion to dismiss against County Clerk Mike Rosedale's request for judicial review of a records request that he had submitted in August of this year. In the city of Sandpoint, the city council will take up the final downtown water design recommendations on Wednesday, October 18th, or they will hear them anyway. Those presentations will come next Wednesday. Out at Traverse Park this week, a small group of protesters chained themselves to a tree. They were there all week until being removed, I think, yesterday morning at about 4:30 in the morning.
But not arrested.
Not arrested, but they were asked or removed from the property. Protest continues outside of the fence that's been erected to begin the construction process. In state news, Idahoans for Open Primaries have gathered 25,000 of the necessary 63,000 signatures to get their measure on the ballot in 2024. And the Ninth Circuit Court will reconsider a Idaho case or a case about emergency room doctors in as it relates to abortion here in the state of Idaho. And the goose hunt at City Beach is back on. And if you would like to hunt geese at City Beach, you have until Sunday to apply for that. And they will make a drawing of to find out who gets a permit.
Touch on, too. The Providence development was approved by the Bonner County Commissioners, and that's been a contentious one as well.
Yeah. With that, and there are more issues going on that we can certainly get to if we have the time. But right now, should we hear that Sandpoint sound?
Okay.
This one was recorded by Mr. Chris Bessler.
And okay, I haven't heard it yet. This is from Sunday, and it's going to be pretty apparent what the sound is. But there's actually three different clips here, and it would take a wild guess for anybody to figure out why there are three different clips or what it represents. But let's take a listen. It's only about 20 seconds.
Sort of a progression there, Chris.
It is a progression. They're very close. So I was up at Romanos Lakes and at the middle lake. And by the way, it was a gorgeous hike. And if we have nice weather this weekend, I recommend it to anybody. In the middle lake, if you contour around the shoreline, you can get to the small stream that's coming in. So I started that first kind of murmuring one was right down at the lake. Then I climbed up further up to a waterfall that's there.
Uh-huh.
So the last one was at the base of the waterfall.
Okay.
There you go. That's the kind of thing you could hear in Sandpoint this last week.
Very nice. Nicely done. Nicely recorded. It has been beautiful. I think a lot of people have been trying to get that that last hike in of the season. And maybe this could be another good weekend for it. Looks like the weather will allow that. What should we start with here? Should we talk?
Well, I think the sports centers and the sports center construction and the trees. And I guess, Evie, you've been down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Jackie swung by this morning to confirm that they're outside the fence now. But, mm-hmm. Evie, what fill us in on what the whole thing is there.
So they've been working on the Traverse Park project. I mean, it kind of took motion this year, but I think it's been in the works for a while now. But when they received a grant in 2022, they were able to create plans for this indoor sports facility that is going to need the removal of 20 trees to be constructed. That is frustrating for a lot of citizens who are voicing their opinions through comment at the city council meetings. They've been working on petitions, and they had a protest before the city council meeting a few weeks ago. And then I think they were also frustrated because during the public comment during that council meeting, they weren't allowed to mention Traverse Park, which a lot of them showed up to do that. And it didn't get too heated, but there were definitely a lot of people who wanted to speak and didn't have the option to, which, So then last week, a couple people, including Molly McKeon and Rebecca Holland, were down there at the park, I think starting a week from yesterday, so Thursday, and they chained themselves to a tree, saying they were going to be showing up daily until construction started, just waiting to see what would happen, kind of talking to people at the park, trying to get people to sign their petition. And then yesterday, or was it yesterday or the day before yesterday?
I think it was yesterday.
Yesterday she called up and asked, or no, it was Wednesday. She called Wednesday. It's confusing because Thursday was when she was removed, early Thursday morning. But Wednesday she called and said she expected to be arrested soon. So a lot of people showed up down there kind of waiting to see what would happen. And they were putting up fences around. And I stuck around for about 2 hours, but nothing happened at that point. Then I went home, and the next morning I saw that she'd posted that she wasn't arrested but had been removed. But I think their hope is to get the city to pause and consider a different location. They also think it should have been put to a vote.
The protest is what I was saying was that, this morning I went by. It does look like they're going to continue protesting. They've kind of set up outside of the fence now. You say they're hoping that it gets put to a vote. Have you heard from anybody on city council whether they're interested in taking this issue up again, or is this it from
your
perspective?
Yeah. I don't think so. And I think Molly did say Justin Dick had shown up last week at some point to talk to them. I don't know what they talked about, but as far as that goes, they haven't really heard from anyone else with the city. I don't expect that to happen. I mean, they've passed it and the contracts are in place, so I'm not exactly sure what that process would look like. I know Molly and Rebecca have an idea of what they think could happen as far as, you know, taking a step back. I think they would have to get a certain amount of council members to claim they made legal mistakes or something like that to get them to kind of rewind a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I don't expect that to happen.
Yeah. So it looks like construction. Yeah, the crew is there.
They were removing picnic tables. Yeah. They were setting up, you know, spray painting the grass. I'm mm-hmm. sure it won't be very long before, you know, they're starting, you know. Mm-hmm.
But the protest, at least for now, seems to continue. And it will probably be a hot-button issue in the election this November, and probably something we'll talk about at the forum next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday is the forum. Starts at 5:30 to 7:30 or 8:00. Who knows? Mm-hmm. It goes a little bit long. at Sandpoint Community Hall. I want to throw that in there.
Mm-hmm. You can hear it right here on KRFY, yeah. Or go down to Community Hall. It'll probably be a full house.
Yeah, we will be broadcasting it, yeah. So you don't have to go. But the Community Hall will be open for everybody that wants to come here with the city council candidates, the mayor candidates, and also the Lake Monterey School District trustee candidates have to say. So had to edge that in there, Jack.
Mm-hmm.
So, I will say the city posture on this has been, hey, we had all kinds of opportunities for people to engage in and give public comment before a decision got made. And all this didn't shake out, didn't even start until the final decision was made, which is kind of like this, the fact of life for anybody that's in government. People just don't get activated until the decision is on the very verge of being made, or has already been made, as in this case. And I'll mention also that the original decision on the placement was going to be right where the current tennis courts are.
Mm-hmm.
And there was actually quite a few people that got involved at that point and said, no, don't take away the tennis courts we already have in order to build this. At that point, the city was listening to what the constituents had to say, and they decided to move it to the site that it's going to be built on now. So the city, I got to say, they're trying to listen to their constituents. But if folks would read their Daily Bee and the Reader and stay informed that they could get put in their comment when these decisions are being made, they can have a better outcome in influencing the decision.
Yeah. I mean, from what I've read of the coverage at this point, it would be incredibly costly to try and go back and redesign it. The design is in place. It would be, I mean, it would cost the city a great deal of money to change course at this time. And city council was unanimous in their approval of the plans at the last meeting. There was
at this point,
you know,
And it is sad to lose those trees.
Yeah.
I'll say that. No question, they're beautiful trees. So sometimes it's a trade-off, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. There does seem to be it speaks to sort of an opinion in some corners that in spite of City Hall's best efforts to hear from the public, some people think that communication is not going as smoothly as it could, and that's going to be a main talking point in the election. I think most of the candidates that you've interviewed,
actually every single one of the six city council candidates have all identified that as a priority for them, is to improve communication. So hopefully they'll come up with some ideas on how to do that.
Yeah,
read more newspapers, right?
Yeah,
ladies.
Should we talk about the county business, internal county divisions here? Our county clerk, Mike Rosedale, in August filed two requests for records from the Bonner County Fair Board. Financial records, I believe, going back to 2010. The Fair Board did receive those records requests because they responded and informed the clerk's office to prepare to receive them within 10 days, but then that was the end of the communication. The county clerk then filed a petition for judicial review to basically have the courts get involved and force the Fair Board to hand over those financial records. The Fair Board has still not divulged the records to the county clerk and has filed a motion to dismiss that application for judicial review. And that's, do I have that about right?
Yeah, that's right. And it's interesting because the Fair Board is claiming that they denied Rosedale's records request based on the fact that he did not list his mailing address on the record requests.
Mm-hmm.
but they didn't even actually legally deny his request. They just haven't responded to him at all. And now it's a little over 2 months after he submitted both of those requests, and he still hasn't received any kind of correspondence from the Fair Board. So,
Lauren Reichenbach, you wrote about this. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to mention that's who we're talking to now. Did you actually talk to Rosedale, it seemed like, in your article?
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So he didn't hear back, like, anything about it? He did not get any kind of response saying, we're not going to send it, or we're...
Yeah, according to him, he hasn't heard anything. The last thing he heard was the 10-day notice email that he received from the deputy clerk, which wasn't... The Fair Board just said, send him a 10-day, and then he hasn't heard anything, and then... They hired an external attorney, and now they filed this motion. So,
yeah.
So how are they financing the attorney?
That is a great question. That's a little bit up in the air right now, too, because the Bonner County Commissioners almost 2 months ago dismantled the memorandum of understanding with them, and they have yet to meet with the Fair Board to discuss ways forward. But right now, unless they meet in the next, I think, 2 weeks, the Fair Board will be completely financially independent from the county. So that has been a question that a lot of residents have been asking but has not yet been answered. Mm-hmm. So,
I'm guessing that this kind of goes back to, he asked for records going back to 2010, the county clerk Rosedale did. Chris, you might have a better memory or understanding of this. There were some kind of allegations of financial malfeasance some years ago under a different a director of the Fair Board. Is that what Rosedale is looking for here? Or is that clear at all, Lauren?
It hasn't been said that is what he's looking for, but I would speculate that has to do with it because a statement was released a little bit ago from the sheriff regarding that whole situation, but a lot of people were saying, oh, there's not really any fact in it. Like, there's not a lot of strong evidence to convict anybody or say that this is what happened or this is what happened. So I think he might just be taking a little bit deeper of a dive to see, like, what actually is happening with their money. So,
Which is not a bad question to ask. And we do have a sunshine law. It does require these kind of documents to be provided, and they're just kind of ignoring it at the moment. So he escalated it by taking it to court. And the sad thing here is that, you know, taxpayers might be paying for both ends of this thing, right?
Yeah.
For his time and an attorney to pursue it in court, and then for the Fair Board to contest it in court.
Yeah.
So. And we've seen that before, of course, here in town with various sorts of disputes.
The
very contentious county governing that we have going on right now.
Yeah.
Boy.
What was I just going to ask? I don't know. One just kind of colorful note is that the grounds for the motion to dismiss are that Rosedale failed to provide his mailing address, but the clerk's office is in the same building as the...
Yeah, they have the same mailing address minus the suite number. And he also sent them some emails, and he has his address clearly listed on there.
Yeah.
And also, if that's their grounds for why they denied it, what are they going to do if he just turns around and resubmits more with his mailing address on there?
Right.
Yeah.
Good
question.
I guess,
Lauren,
we'll see what I get. Do you know when both of these things have been filed before a judge? Do we know when we'll hear more or anything?
I believe the hearing is on October 14th.
Okay.
I believe, and that's going to be held via Zoom in front of a Kootenai County judge. But I don't know if it's going to be open to the public. So we'll just be waiting to hear more.
Okay. The 14th is tomorrow. If they're hearing it on Saturday.
Oh, it might be the 16th then.
Okay, on Monday?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, either way, soon, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll look in next week's paper to see what happens.
Let's stick to the county for just a moment. And sure. Lauren, fill us in on the Providence development being approved by the county commissioners, because that, again, has been pretty contentious.
Yeah, that was definitely very contentious. There was about a three-hour public hearing, I think it was last week, that they held to hear public opinion, and only one person spoke in favor of it throughout the entire thing. And they said that it was really good because there's a housing shortage in Sandpoint, and the more development that happens, the better it is. But a lot of people disagreed with that because they're saying the housing that's going to go up isn't priced for people who live in Sandpoint, and someone who makes the median income in Sandpoint can't afford these houses. So is it really benefiting Sandpoint, or is it benefiting tourists who are coming in, staying for the summer or a few months in the winter and leaving? So it was definitely a little bit heated, but in the end, they voted to approve it. Asia Williams had some issues with it because she felt like they were kind of jumping the gun on a lot of things, because some surveys are being taken still on the property that haven't, like, the conclusions haven't been reached on what they find with those surveys. So she was trying to wait until all of the evidence came in to make a decision, but they passed it. So. Mm-hmm.
So this is located, the Providence subdivision is located just outside of Kootenay as you're headed east on Highway 200 towards, say, Hope. Mm-hmm. It's about a 39-acre plot, reading from your story, Lauren. and there are 116 lots that they're proposing to develop there. So it's a pretty good-sized housing development.
Mm-hmm. So each
I think one of the concerns is impact on traffic on Highway 200 as well.
Yes, yes. There's a lot of concern with that, because the people who live on Providence Road already say it's already a nightmare trying to get through that intersection. But the Idaho Department of Transportation has done a lot of surveys and studies on that intersection, and they're requiring a left- and right-hand turn lane to be constructed for that intersection, so it's a lot easier for traffic to maneuver and everything, and they're going to require illumination at that intersection, so it's a lot easier to see cars coming and going. And I think they're doing at least one more study for any other requirements that would be needed, so I don't know if they're going to require, like, a traffic light or something like that, but one of the requirements of the commissioners approving this development is that the applicant and the developers have to complete all of the Idaho Department of Transportation's requirements before they can finish construction.
And Highway 200 on that, you know, kind of the east side coming into Sandpoint is pretty crowded right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it definitely is. I know the people that come turn off of the Ponder Point into, like, the Whiskey Jack area coming out there. There's been a number of wrecks there.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a really tough to turn left to go into town coming out of there. Now, this would be a right turn coming into town, but mm-hmm. It's going to add a lot to the congestion, I'm sure. It's inevitable.
Yeah. Yeah, and it might benefit from a traffic light, but mm-hmm. we'll see what they say.
Another traffic light.
mm-hmm. It is not – there was talk of, I think, Kootenay annexing it, but they're not going to, or they don't plan – the city of Kootenay does not plan to annex the Providence development, so this will just be – unincorporated, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it's approved now, so construction will probably be underway sometime soon. Okay. Well, should we talk about the goose hunt? Anything?
Yeah.
You guys going hunting this year?
Maybe next year.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We could talk a little bit about the elections.
Sure, but let's not leave people in suspense on the goose hunt. So,
okay, yeah.
The goose hunt is going to be at Sandpoint City Beach. It was really unusual for a city park to host a goose hunt of any kind. That has raised some eyebrows, you know, regionally. This story has been picked up when they did this last, actually, mm-hmm. I think it was early this year. Mm-hmm. They had the first one. Right in the middle of winter, there mm-hmm. weren't any geese around.
Yeah.
The idea behind having a goose hunt at City Beach is it would discourage geese from coming there and hanging out. And as we know, there's a big problem with geese and geese poop all over the place. And the city's been looking for ways to get the geese to move out of there, and this is one idea. So the goose hunt will start in November, and if you're a goose hunter, you could put in an application to hunt. I think they're going to have three or four different blind areas, so the, you'd have each hunter or hunter and their friends would have a particular part mm-hmm. of the beach that they can hunt from. And I was just down there yesterday, and there are still a good number of geese hanging around.
This is the latest, I guess, development in the ongoing saga of the geese. Last year, only one goose was shot, but it was a hunt in the middle of winter. This is the first time they'll be doing it in the fall, more traditional goose hunting season, I guess. And then last spring, of course, they captured, I think, about 200 geese and euthanized them to a certain amount of shock from the locals who just woke up to find that all their geese were gone.
Yeah. Well, 150 of them anyways.
Yeah.
And it was pretty amazing because less than 2 weeks later when I was down at the beach, I counted 40 geese.
Mm-hmm.
So they quickly repopulated. And it's been a matter of great frustration for the city. They're trying to figure out how to handle that. Actually, we could roll over into the next story, which is about the downtown waterfront design.
Yeah.
Because part of the design that's being proposed is to replant big sections of the city beach with a type of grass that geese don't like.
Hmm.
So that's an interesting part of that design concept.
Okay.
And I don't know if that grass is nice for people to hang out and do stuff on as well. I mean, you want both, right? It's a city park. That's what the grass is for.
Mm-hmm.
It's for people to have games. And when you go down there, you can see people setting up badminton and their own little volleyball courts and kicking soccer balls around and throwing footballs. And that's what those big open lawns are for. But all the goose poop out there really impairs the enjoyment of that. The downtown waterfront design, have you guys been reporting on that? I'm sure.
I think my boss reported on the last update, but it's not super brand new news. It's just suggesting the they're going to preview the third stage of designs that includes revisions from the community or the city council's recommendations. I think that's going to integrate some of the concerns that they want to address and with like the multimodal transportation plan and the overarching plan. I think they want to integrate a little bit more of those concepts into their design. But other than that, there isn't a bunch new there. It's just going to be previewed. They're going to come back with their improvements.
So that and that's going to be, I think, also on the 18th that what they're calling the jury. It's the local folks that have been interacting with the design organization, the design group that's producing this downtown waterfront design concept. And it's supposed to guide development for the downtown, provide a master plan, not just for the waterfront, but actually reaching all the way to the Granary District.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some interesting ideas that they're including in the plan. Now, it's just a master plan. It doesn't mean any of this stuff actually gets built mm-hmm. this way, because as a lot of this is stuff that would not even happen for 20 years or more. It'd be staged development to kind of enhance things. It's interesting. The design group, GGLO, Bernardo Wills, had produced their initial concepts a couple months ago. And then what they did is they took some feedback on that and they took the concept back and came back with a bunch of tweaks to it. One of the things they're recommending is that they expand the historic district overlay to be a bigger part of the downtown to mm-hmm. kind of protect the historical integrity of the town. Seems like people would like that idea. And then they're also recommending a 55-foot height limit on buildings where there's currently, I think, a 65-foot mm-hmm. height limit. So they're suggesting that be scaled down a little bit.
Yeah,
And it's only 65 feet if you include condominiums in the upper parts of the building. The idea behind that, and when it was instituted, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, that height limit, is that it would encourage people to actually live in our downtown, not and create a kind of a mixed residential commercial use for the downtown. But that's had a lot of feedback. 65-foot tall buildings are pretty big, and it's not really consistent with the rest of the downtown. So part of this plan would be to scale that back a little bit. And then they came back with a number of changes to the way they had laid out different ideas for City Beach, which is kind of interesting to me. And Evie, I don't know if you've dug in. You're the City Beat reporter. I don't know if you've dug in on what the current master plan for this for City Beach is. But there's a process just a few years ago that, with a whole different firm to design our parks, which Traverse Park is part of it, and of course the City Beach. And this design firm is kind of basically throwing out the ideas of the first design firm. So it's a new plan for what we might do with City Beach. One of the things that was called for in the existing plan for City Beach was to acquire the area where the RV park is right now and use that for a new boat launch. And the new plan holds that idea as well. And, of course, the city did proceed to acquire that land. So, there's changes afoot for City Beach, no matter what happens, just by our growth and use of there. A big part of this as well is designing the Sand Creek waterfront, which we currently lack a cohesive plan for. And I just noticed.
We've
exceeded our 30-minute goal here.
Are you surprised by that, Chris? I was just going to say the 55-foot height limit would be the only buildings that I can think of that are over that right now are the bank, the what is now Columbia Bank building, and then of course the old granary, which is I think about 70 or 71 feet. Something like that. That's the tallest building in downtown.
Yeah, I think the Seasons buildings may be that
You're
tall.
Probably right. Well. Those are four stories.
Well, here we are. We're over time. I do want to throw a shout out. You know, we do have our forum coming up on Tuesday, City Hall, 5:30 to 7:30 for Sandpoint City candidates as well as Lake Pend Oreille School District trustee. And today is the last day to pre-register to vote. In the election. So if you haven't yet registered or you're not sure if you're registered, go to, I think it's Vote Idaho. Do you guys know? There's a state site that's operated by the Secretary of State where you can actually register to vote online. Mm-hmm. Takes just a few minutes to do that. You have until midnight tonight to get registered. Of course, you could go down and register at the Bonner County Elections Office, too. In the county building. But if you pre-register, it makes it a lot easier. Mm-hmm. It is, you can register to vote the day of the election in Idaho, but it's a lot easier to handle it in advance.
VoteIdaho.gov is the website.
Yeah.
That is correct. Will you guys be, well, or I guess it would be Evie, would you be at the forum on Tuesday? Will we see you down there?
Likely. I'm trying to remember if I have anything. Sometimes I have a meeting Tuesdays, but...
Sorry to put you on the spot here on the
air. No, it's all good.
Anyway, well, this radio station will be there, so that should be a show.
There will be news, Evie, to be had, I'm sure.
I think so. This is the only time that I'm aware of that the all the candidates will be kind of in the same room together.
Yeah, it's the only forum that I know about as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there we go again. Evie Seberg and Lauren Reichenbach, both of them reporters for the Bonner County Daily Bee. That's where you can find their writing and anything else you guys want to say or mention about yourselves. What's coming up in next week's paper? What's going to be news next week? How about that?
Lots of good stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Okay. And thanks to Evergreen Realty, our underwriter for this program, commercial and residential property listings, and supporters of the radio station and North Idaho News of the Week. Stay tuned for Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long right here on KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio.
This is KRFY 88.5 Ponderay.